Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Making sense of market movements and stocks in the news, Arun Pai, Chief Crystals Officer at Crystal AI, joins us with his view. Arun, good morning to you.
Good morning, Michelle.
Let's start with Brexit. Boris Johnson says the latest is he will push for a general election if the EU agrees to delay Brexit until January. So a pause on the Brexit bill, a lot of confusion over the timetable to fast-track it through Parliament. EU leaders considering whether to grant a delay to the 31st October Brexit deadline and what length that delay should take. Arun, how is this impacting global markets?
Well, you know, talk about kicking the can down the road, huh? This is not the first time this has actually happened. And it just seems to be never ending. As you mentioned, the whole postponement of the whole Brexit vote, it seems like what's been agreed on now is going to be a 3-month extension up till Jan 31st. And I think this time was a little bit interesting where the reason it failed when Johnson was trying to fast track the bill through the parliament. Mm. The initial bill, actually, which was endorsing the general principles of the bill, he actually won that with 329 votes in favor against 299 votes against. So it was interesting to see at least there's some traction happening. But, you know, just given the fact that the deadline's coming up at the end of this month, it was just impossible for the parliament to push it through. What seems to be the case now, though, is the EU Council President, Donald Tusk, has recommended to all the European leaders to back this extension to the Brexit deadline for 3 months. And yes, there's a little bit of bantering going on with the French Prime Minister saying, no, we're not going to push it down any further. But it seems like Jan 31st is what's going to happen. Johnson claims that he will ask for elections to take place in the UK once the bill is extended. And then we'll see. I mean, you could see cable or what FX traders call GBP USD has not moved substantially that much. It was bouncing around off the lows of about 122 earlier in August and October. It had rallied to about 130 and now has come off a little bit because we're going back into this market situation where no one knows what's going to actually happen. The market just wants clarity one way or the other, and it's sadly not receiving that.
Okay, and speaking of hoping for clarity, I was reading a great article in the Nikkei Asian Review saying the protests over in Hong Kong won't end Hong Kong's role as Asia's top financial hub. That report saying the wealthy are still keeping their money in Hong Kong, perceived as the gateway to China. What do you think? Do you think the protests are going to bring an end to Hong Kong's position?
It's interesting because, you know, taking a step back, if you look at Hong Kong and Singapore have always had this friendly rivalry of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. If you think of it at the beginning of the millennium, like in, say, like 1997 odd, Hong Kong's GDP was close to double that of Singapore's. Singapore was give or take 100 billion. Hong Kong was about like 180 billion. Fast forward 20 years, and now it's pretty much neck and neck, even though Hong Kong has close to a 50% larger population. So it's interesting to see how these two economies have evolved. And even though Hong Kong had the backing, quote unquote, of being the gateway into that of China, many conflicting reports have come out where it says that you know, numerous billions of dollars have moved out of Hong Kong because of this political unease that's taking place over there, whereas Singapore, on the other hand, is getting boosted quite substantially because the whole ASEAN region has come up. I think this time around, as compared to even SARS for that matter, it seems to be that the Hong Kong economy is in a little bit more of a difficult footing. China is not happy with the way Hong Kong is behaving. And you can see that in the way it's trying to set up Beijing and Shanghai to kind of replicate Hong Kong in terms of, be it the airport size, special economic zone. So the whole concept of where people used to envision Hong Kong is, you know, the Western way to deal with China. I think you will be seeing, this is not going to happen overnight, obviously, mm-hmm. but I can imagine in the longer term, China will definitely start taking upon itself more and more responsibilities of being its own financial capital and not requiring Hong Kong to that extent.
Interesting, interesting perspective. If we look now at Facebook's Libra, also in the news, a BBC report says that the G7 has a working group and it's identified major risks from digital assets likely directed towards Facebook's Libra. BBC saying that G7 is developing this report, identifying the major risks posed by digital currencies. A lot in the news about Mark Zuckerberg defending Libra as a way for the U.S. to extend its financial control, so to speak, over the rest of the world. What do you think of G7 countries seemingly trying to find common ground on Libra?
I think, personally, the G7, I mean, obviously, like, you need to get some kind of consensus if you're trying to come up with a global currency of sorts, especially if it is being pseudo-managed by a company called Facebook. But I think, you know, we discussed this last week also of what a mess the company is in. I think Zuckerberg is taking like the ace out of his pocket and he's trying to play this as a U.S. versus rest of the world. And he literally is, you know, as you mentioned, to extend America's financial leadership. I realize this whole society and economy right now is talking about U.S. versus China and how China is the bad person in this economy. Let's try and make this in America versus China. This is required and absolutely essential for America to still stay at the forefront of the world financial markets because China is doing the same thing. So you know what, Federal Reserve, President Trump, you guys better be on my side, otherwise America will be second. And I think that's a brilliant stroke. Whether it actually materializes that way or not, I'm not so sure, but he's trying to side himself with the U.S. And so time will tell what actually happens to that or not.
Yeah, really interesting since, you know, the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, Facebook has been seen as something that stands in opposition to democracy in the to the U.S. itself. So it's really interesting that Zuckerberg is couching this as, you know, Facebook needing to be part of the U.S. versus China tussle for financial leadership. Interesting.
Brilliant PR move. Brilliant PR move.
Okay, we look at happier news. Singapore and U.S. have agreed to cooperate on infrastructure finance and market building. Good news for investors, Arun?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, infrastructure is something that is extensively lacking in the ASEAN region. We are lucky enough to be in a country like Singapore, where we might not see this on a day-to-day basis. Like if a train comes even like a minute late, it becomes headlines in our media, right? For better or worse, that's a different story to talk about. But in our surrounding regions, it is extremely essential. And I think the Global Infrastructure Hub came out with a number to the tune of something like $51 trillion. $1 trillion is required for infrastructure spend through 2040. So just in the span of 20 years. So there's definitely a big requirement for it. Singapore, in a very smart way, is being at the forefront of this. The deal struck with the U.S. is obviously a very important one, but five others were signed at the Asia Infrastructure Forum during the first week of this month with countries like Cambodia, Indonesia, and Philippines. Mm. So Singapore knows that let's take advantage of the power and position that Singapore is in, especially with relation to the financial markets, and let it become the hub where all the financing can take place. Because when financing takes place, there is a certain advantage to the local companies to win those contracts also. So I think, again, not over the next week or 2 weeks, but over the longer course, we'd expect to see some kind of a benefit to the larger construction companies based in Singapore and, of course, financial services over here.
Okay, let's take a look at the Singapore market and two hot stocks. Temasek Holdings bid to buy an additional 30% stake in Keppel Corp. That would give Temasek a controlling stake in the rig builder. I mean, when Keppel shares resumed trade, they soared not quite as high as Temasek's offer price, but both stocks have seen a rise of 15%. What do you think? Is there still more upside potential in Keppel shares?
I think Temasek has the advantage of basically having lifelong patient capital. And while they sensed a substantial weakness in the O&M space, which can obviously be seen reflected in the share price, but considering they have the advantage of permanent capital, basically, take advantage of it, buy a bunch of these shares, or at least in this case, Keppel, take majority ownership to try and structure and shape the more longer-term strategy of the company and not be bounced around because of quarterly volatile earnings. So I think consolidation is definitely on the card. Back in, say, like 5 to 10 years ago, there was a lot of capital put into this place. That capital has all substantially left. And Singapore, considering that space is 7% of GDP of the country, there is a vested interest in ensuring that Singapore stays at the forefront of it. Singapore can see that this has happened in Korea and China, which are two of the biggest competitors in the shipyard and the shipping business. You can already see a lot of consolidation taking place. Hyundai Heavy Industries bought over a Daewoo Shipbuilding and Marine in China. China State Shipbuilding Corporation and China Shipbuilding Industry were merged. So you're seeing all these massive heavyweights taking their formation taking shape in the neighboring countries. Singapore has to do the same to try and take advantages of economies of scale. Temasek, I think, did a very smart thing. Take over 51% of Keppel. I personally envision in the long run there to be some kind of a merger between Sembcorp Industries, which saw its shares also rise by 10-15%, like you were saying, and you know, make it into a proper, like a much larger conglomerate. Keppel, that being said, had diversified itself quite substantially already into the energy and like other verticals. I can probably envision a time when Temasek thinks it's right, obviously, to split off those assets, merge what's in the O&M space of Keppel with that of Sembcorp, even though the latter has been performing quite poorly, make it into one of the larger conglomerates in this region.
Okay, and finally, in another piece of news, regulators surprised markets by announcing plans to issue 4 5G licenses in Singapore, not 2. There will be 2 full-fledged 5G networks, 2 smaller ones with limited coverage, all 4 expected to roll out next year, although it will take longer before there's nationwide coverage. We've been prepared for this expectation-wise. So what impact, Arun, do you think this move to issue 4 5G licenses could have on incumbent telcos like Singtel?
I think it's a smart move, personally, because for nationwide 5G rollout, it would take a substantial amount of time and obviously substantial amounts of investment. The analysts were ranging this anywhere from like 5 to 7 years. And now, obviously, Singapore not having any natural resources, it has to always stay at the cutting edge or forefront of technology. So making the equivalent of like a sandbox in the financial space for this 5G spectrum, I think makes a lot of sense, because you need to have like smart ports, smart factories. You need to have certain locations that has 5G like right now to be able to compete against Korea, China, and the U.S. And also, let's keep keep mindful of the fact that there are 4 telcos in Singapore, right? Of which 2 are extremely large, like your Singtel and StarHub, and M1 and TPG, not so much. So enabling 4 licenses for 4 telcos, let the 2 potentially smaller ones at least start to dabble into the more localized 5G spectrums, while Singtel and StarHub can cough up the big bucks, which comes up close to something like $55 million for the 3.5 gigahertz spectrum. Let the larger companies play in that league. So I think Singtel StarHub, I don't think it's going to take away from the fact that there are 2 more licenses. There's enough space for the 4 telcos to play around in. I think one share that is going to be interesting is Netlink in this space. So it's something to watch out for.
Well, fabulous talking to you as always. I'm going to check out Netlink's share price in just a while. Arun Pai, Chief Crystals Officer at Crystal AI. Have a great day, Arun.
Thank you, Michelle. You too.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.